What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Self-Helpless podcast. I'm Delaney Fisher, and today I'm chatting with Shelby McGuire Canlis, who is a board-certified coach. Her background is in HR, and she helps people find jobs they enjoy and excel at those jobs. And my goodness, she is just a wealth of knowledge. I actually met Shelby because my husband Cam took me out for my birthday, and he surprised me with tickets to this like outdoor tea experience, and there was also a live improv show based on that show Bridgerton. Anyway, it was such a blast, and we ended up sitting next to Shelby and a friend of hers and connected that way. So as we started chatting, I found out about the work that she does and knew she would be an incredible guest for the podcast to support all of us. So today we are talking about how to find jobs that are actually available, how to help you determine what kind of work you may find meaningful to you, or that might be a really great fit for your personality. So many amazing tips and hacks for applications, resumes, cover letters, the interview process, the follow-up. Shelby also debunks some common myths around the entire job search process as well. That was really interesting. So I highly recommend taking notes during this episode so you can jot down the action steps that feel like the right next move for you specifically. I just wish I knew all of these things so much earlier on in life. It would have been very helpful. So this was just excellent guidance. And we're not only covering the tactics and strategy, but we also talk about taking care of your mental health and your well-being, because that depression that can creep in when you are applying and applying and nothing seems to be working, that can really mess with you, and you are not alone in that. So we dig into that too, because I mean, that is the most important part of all of this, really. I also share some experiences of mine, both around applying for different jobs and being on the other end of hiring for different positions as well. So whether you're looking for just a job, any job, or maybe your first job, or you're considering a pivot into a different industry or title, maybe something that fits with a lifestyle that you'd like to have, or you simply just want to learn about other careers that are out there to keep your options open as you gain more work experience, this episode will help you get clear on what you can do next in order to set yourself up for the kind of success that you would like to have. And I just want to say, finding work is not a one-size-fits-all solution. There are so many things to consider during this process, and there are so many different approaches that you can take. But Shelby gives really great advice on how tending to some of these best practices are really going to skyrocket your opportunities. So here we go. I'd love to touch on kind of like how your values can help kind of be a compass on even what do you want to apply for? You know, what jobs do you want to look for?
COVID really gave people the chance to rethink what matters to them.
Yeah.
And so part of, you know, one of the most frequent things I get is like, you know, how to find a job that matters, because I'm realizing I'm spending so much time there, even if we're working from home, which could be even worse sometimes, the time you spend. but they're realizing like that doesn't really jive with what I want and what I think long term would mean something to me. And so that's a big one.
Yes. I'll definitely share my personal experience with the job search, whether it's building businesses and pivoting or applying to places and trying to get promoted and all of that. So let's start with maybe values of how can people start to narrow down what jobs they want to seek out? And also, you know, the people that are like, I just need money. I just need a job, right? Like it can also be a privilege to take your time to find work. And so maybe you can just share a little bit about both of those situations.
Fully 100% agree with that. And I'm happy you acknowledged it. I'd actually written a note that said disclaimer because I wanted to say to anybody who's listening, like, I know that a lot of what I say will sound oversimplified and they'll, you know, they'll be like, sure, you make it sound so easy, but, and I get it. So I just would encourage people to sort of take the spirit of what I say and do with it what they can, right? Just do their best. As far as finding a job, sometimes you just have to find a job. And I like to think of that as your next job, not your last job.
Yeah, right? That's great. Yes. Yeah, and something for the time being.
Yeah, exactly. But make it worthwhile. Like figure out with this or with any job, like figure out what you want to get out of it. So that time matters, right? So even if you're like, well, you know, I really want to get a job at a hospital, nobody's hiring, so I'm going to be a barista for now. Like, great. Be the best one. Learn the most you can about customer service. Like learn how to be effective in a really high paced environment. Like get what you can from that and then keep looking, right? Just keep looking. And so don't feel like you're compromising. And if you can make some meaning out of it, then you won't. You won't feel like you're going backwards. You won't feel like a failure. You will just acknowledge it as the next step, right? As that thing we're building on.
Oh, and absolutely.
So, yeah. Now you'd mentioned values and I didn't even talk about those yet. So, but you're right. It can be like a compass. I like to think of it as a filter. Like if you can identify what your values are, whether that's like, I want to be home with my, you know, my family more, or I want to have time to volunteer. I want a company that's in alignment with my beliefs. Like all of those are valid. And all of those matter, write them down. Figure out which ones are must-haves, which ones you can be flexible on. And then look for companies around that. Use surveys, use best places to work, use the B Corp directory. Don't be limited by just what's posted as, you know, as having open positions. Go be proactive and look for those companies. Look at the products you use. Look at those companies. It can be both a filter and a like jumping off point for your creativity as far as identifying where you want to look.
I love this. I love that you said just look at it as your next job and not your last job, because we can put so much emphasis on like if I apply here or if I take this job, what does this mean about me? You know, maybe it's not something flashy or something that you even want to tell people that you do or whatever. And I've definitely been in that situation where I just need something. I'm applying to a grocery store, you know, whatever. And it's those jobs that gave me such a great foundation for my creativity and for making things happen that were closer to whatever that dream job I had in mind at that time was. And so I know that I've talked to a lot of people about how when they feel like they have to find work that maybe isn't creative or whatever it is, they feel so defeated. And I'm like, no, this is like such a great tool for your creativity. When you know where like where your next paycheck is coming from, I feel like it frees up this mental space for you to create. My recent values that I use to find my current job that is outside of my business, I really wanted to work from home if possible. I love working from home. I really wanted to do something with in the vegan space, whether that was with a vegan brand or, you know, a nonprofit or whatever. And that's kind of the only guidelines I had. Just like, can I find something remote and can I find that? And that was enough to help me narrow things down because it can be so overwhelming, especially with remote work, right? That it's like, wait, I could potentially work for most companies anywhere, like that's kind of too much for somebody's brain sometimes. Yeah. We have a lot of people who tune into this podcast that have so many interests that it overwhelms them. So they might be thinking, oh, you know, I like music, but I also like finance, but I also, you know, and they're like, I could work for any of these industries. So which one do I go for? Could you share any examples that you might have from your own experience or with clients where what helped them narrow things down to even figure out what their very next step would be if somebody's really having trouble with it?
I would say just start going down one of the roads. Like, just pick one. I don't care if you pick it out of a hat. I don't care if it's based on your mood that day. Just pick one, right?
I love it. Yes.
Because there's nothing legally binding about you picking a direction to pursue, right? You can always be like, yeah, tried it, not working out, but I have these other interests, thank goodness. Or you'll find, oh, I really love doing that, so I don't want to do it as a job. I'd love to keep it a hobby. But you don't know unless you take that first step. So just pick. And then start talking to people, right? If you're in actual job search mode, you might need to be like a little more aggressive in that you might want to, start talking to people with a specific role in mind. You might want to actually start applying to see what the interviews are like, you know, do those things. But if you're in that exploration phase where you are currently working, there's no real rush, just a desire, a general desire, then start looking at people on LinkedIn who have titles in that industry and see what it says they do, right? Mm-hmm. Start just reaching out to people and seeing who you can start conversations with to get a real day in the life. And then step back and say, what still sounds interesting to me? Now that I've sort of done some of this, what has floated to the top? What remains sort of that thread I want to continue to pull on? And then just keep moving forward. Just do the next thing and the next thing.
I love that you said this. It's just like, just pick something, right? Because I think we can get stuck in overanalyzing rumination mode of like, it's got to be the perfect next step. And it really doesn't. You could just try something and then it's okay to change your mind. And I love that you said like, utilize other people. This is one of my favorite things that I do in my life is if I'm curious about a topic or a job or some kind of creative project, I will ask if I could get a consultation with somebody. And it's either, you know, something that I pay for or something that they're very gracious to give me, you know, for free, where it's just kind of like a networking chat where you can ask questions and all that stuff. Another hot tip, if you want to connect with people, you can start a podcast and, you know, and interview people that you're interested in what they do. And now you've talked to them for, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. Yeah. But I love this because I think that connection can really crack a lot of codes for people.
Right. I love the idea of that because it goes along with like, if you have a job and you ask to talk to somebody about what they're doing, there are low stakes for them. You're not asking them for anything except to talk about themselves. They're going to do it. Same with a podcast. If you're like, hey, I want to have you on my podcast, low stakes for them. You're not asking them for a job. So they're more inclined to do it. Yes. So think about that. Like if you, if you don't want to start a podcast, at least start a conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, but having that sort of, that idea that I'm not asking them for anything except like maybe their time and their thought expertise, you know, around their whatever it is. Most people, it's when you go in asking them straight for a job, that's when people like ignore you, shy away. So just keep that in mind.
Exactly. Yeah. You just touched on something so important, I think, for any kind of outreach, whether you're, you know, looking for a job or you're applying to something else, right? Maybe you're applying to be on somebody's podcast or you're whatever it is. You're outreaching to an ideal client or something. It's like, how can you lead with a gift? It doesn't have to be a physical gift or something tangible or whatever, but asking like, I am willing to pay for your time. Would you be willing to meet with me for 30 minutes? Or I am so fascinated by what you do. Can I interview you? You know, you're like, you're giving something valuable. You're giving them a chance to share their experience. You're potentially paying them, you know, for their time. I just think that creates this openness, like you said. They're not like restricted, like, what does this person want from me?
the guards are not there. The guards come down, and then you might get even more from the interaction than you ever thought possible. Thank you for touching on how people can kind of internally kind of align with their next steps. Why don't we talk about when it comes to actually searching for jobs that are available? Any tips that you have for, I mean, you know, there's tons of platforms out there, right? Like the Indeeds and ZipRecruiters of the world, but there's also, you know, like brands' websites, you know, right, where you can directly apply. Anything that you want to share about that process?
Okay, just cut me off when you need to, okay?
Like, do we have 10 hours?
There's a ton here. First of all, to your point, I would recommend going to the actual website, the brand website, as much as possible. So use LinkedIn, use Indeed, use ZipRecruiter to find the positions, but then just go to the website and apply directly. Okay. That way we know. Like, Indeed's should take you to the original site anyway. LinkedIn, a lot of people get trapped in that sort of quick apply thing because, you know, they're applying for so many positions. It's so tempting, but I really want you in the company's database. And so the best way to make sure that's there is to go directly to it. And also to see if the position's still posted. Because quite honestly, right, things get stale and sometimes they just don't get taken down and that kind of thing. So
That's what I heard is like a lot of people forget to take positions down. So it looks like there's a lot more jobs available than there actually are, which can be so frustrating for applicants who are like, why doesn't anybody want to interview me? But it's actually not you. There's so much going on those platforms.
It gives me peace of mind to know people are applying directly on the site.
Yeah.
Do everything you can to research. Be super creative. Sometimes there's like hospitality specific websites. There's creative specific websites. Like, you know, do a little digging and find out what those are. They shouldn't be the sole site you apply on though. Like, I think what I want people to like take away is that when you're job searching, you have to do like all the things. It's no one thing. It's not your resume. It's not just your interview. It's not just where you looked for the job. It's all the things that get you that next job. So just be mindful of that. And once you get caught up on the postings, like, you know, give yourself a week to catch up, to find the sites, catch up on the sites, and then you'll only have to look like 1 or 2 days a week at the sites because you'll see what's new, what's popped up since last you looked. So that should minimize your time. When I say do all the things, that means applying, following up, networking, and proactively reaching out, right? Mm-hmm. Because that way you're going to hit the jobs that are open, the job, you know, you'll get in with the jobs that maybe aren't open yet, or you'll get the recommendations to people. They're like, hey, you know, my buddy's at that company and I can make an introduction for you. We need to be doing sort of all the things in our job search.
Yeah.
With that, my recommendation also is that you don't get stuck on any one thing. So like pick one thing a day to work on, pick one day a week to just do applications, pick another day just to do follow-up, another day to do networking, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's one to build momentum. The other is because you walk away feeling like you accomplished something. All this is sort of predicated on the belief that you have a job target. So I also don't believe that you should apply for everything. I think you should apply for those things that really matter and invest your time and energy in that in order to, again, build that momentum.
Right.
It's definitely if you like apply for everything, you'll get nothing kind of thing.
I love that. That's so important because I think people try to go wide instead of deep, where it's like, I'm just going to kind of like copy and paste this to as many different openings that I see versus here are the three that are speaking to me the most. How can I go above and beyond for each of these? It might take the same amount of time and energy, but I think you're going to have better chances when you're really personalizing some of that stuff for the jobs that you actually want versus let me apply to a million things. Absolutely. And there's only three I really wanted, but they didn't get the time and attention they deserve.
There's some real technical reasons for that. Yeah. You are always applying online now, which means it has to go through the applicant tracking system, which means your resume has to like hit their algorithm just right. So if you're applying to everything, it's highly unlikely that you're customizing, you know, you're making those little tweaks necessary to get your resume seen.
Yes.
And so that's the other reason. And then also you need to put out a consistent brand. And so that means like part of networking and part of following up is just being a presence on LinkedIn of, you know, replying to other people's stories, sharing out your own thoughts and articles, and being so that when that company looks you up online, which they will, they see that this person really does fit with what they say they're doing on their cover letter or resume.
I like that companies are now offering basically email lists. Like, you can join their email list to find out about new job opportunities. I think that's really great and convenient as well, where it's like, ah, oh, I really want to work for this company, but they don't have any open positions, or they don't have any positions that really make sense for me. But I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, put my name in, and I'll be able to, you know, get a little message about when something's available. I think that's really great. I can share kind of from the other point of this, where as somebody who has hired several people for my business, I can tell you exactly what's worked for me, for them, for getting the job. So I actually would post on Indeed or ZipRecruiter, but it was so overwhelming because within 24 hours, I'd probably have over 300 applicants, and so many more than qualified for the position. But because I only need, you know, one person, I would pretty much take, you know, the first maybe 5 to 10 people that felt like a good fit or whatever. And then I would close down the opening, because I would just get bombarded with so many resumes. But the people that actually got the job, they sent a personal message as well to my email. Like, if they looked me up, they were able to find me. They sent a message about, you know, why they think they would be a great fit, not only for the job, but based on my values. I share my values on my brand, you know, my branding and stuff like that. And it gave me a chance to actually go find their resume and pull it from, you know, the 300 plus applications, which I did. So the people that just took a little bit of extra time and said, I really want this, and here's why. I mean, we're talking about like a 3 to 5 sentence email, at least a little blurb. Personal, doesn't have to be like super formal, very conversational. And it allowed me to say, okay, I picked some people based on a resume, but I'm going to go ahead and pick people who actually also reached out on top of it. And that was kind of the pool that I used to, you know, get the interviews and all of that. So I don't know, that worked for me a lot.
And that is what I refer to as follow-up. Like, that is exactly what I ask my people to do. Like, find, if you can't find somebody in the company that's maybe in alignment with that role, find a recruiter. And your people had the benefit of you being a small business, right? So you were the person.
Right.
As opposed to like these large, if they're applying to one of the larger like tech companies, it's all, you know, the online system. And so if you were to reach out to a recruiter or a person in the company with that 3 to 5, like I say, it's an opening, a hook, and a close is my, right? Like, love here's it. Saying, I actually applied. I like followed the rules. Here's the position I applied for. So mentally they can already place you. And then the hook is like, here's what makes me legitimate. I really do have the experience. And then the close is just, let me know. Like, if there's anything else you need, just let me know. And especially with large companies, send it to multiple people. You have zero to lose.
Right. Oh, I love that. Yes.
And there's ways to find people. Like, you can message them on LinkedIn, or you can, like, you can send a connection request with a message. You have the, if you pay for it, you can actually send a message. Or you can go to like one of the sites like hunter.io and find their email address and send them a note. And so there's a lot of things you can do to be seen. And in all of those interactions, like, if you send out, when you're job searching, you should have a standardized bottom signature on the bottom of your email that has your LinkedIn hyperlink, so they can easily, like, it's so easy to just click.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so we want them to see. But yeah, I'm so glad to hear that is how you did it. Yeah,
it worked.
Just real eyes to see us, right? It's a real set of eyes.
And it's really interesting because the people who I interviewed and ended up getting the job are the ones that took that extra time, because I think they're also thinking, you know, they're probably taking the time, extra time on the jobs that they actually want versus just that, let me just do apply to everything. And that really showed up in the interview. Mm-hmm. I could feel the kind of excitement for whatever the role was. So maybe that's helpful, but it's really great to know that just a little blurb could make the difference. I would love to hear about some of the logistics of the resume stuff, right? Like all the systems these are going through, if whatever programs, AI stuff is catching you know, titles of things. What can people do to ensure that maybe they're getting through the next round if they're applying with thousands or hundreds of applicants?
It's definitely a vote early, vote often situation, and that we want the top of your resume to have as many of the keywords and use the language from the posting is the best way to make sure it matches.
Love it.
And we want, so I think resume writers talk about the top third of your resume needs to be the most impactful. And so there are little things you can do. One, like have a professional summary at top. Don't just go right into your experience, because a professional summary will give you a chance to maybe use some words over, some words in your summary that are also in your experience. That's what the systems are looking for. Like, how often is it used? How high in their resume is it used? That kind of thing. And so, so we want to use that. You can also put in, under your professional summary, you can put in like your top skills. And that's what you really tweak for the position. Like if there's certain technologies they use, or research processes or something like that, like put those in there and use the exact language.
Yes.
And real quick, I would say same on your cover letter, like use match the language, because we don't know who's reading that cover letter first. Right. So it has to be like, if HR intern who doesn't understand, you know, the position reads it, they just need to be able to match language, right? And then as they pass it on, like it needs to be well written enough to show, you know, that you actually know how to write. But so when it comes to the resume, you don't need your address. Like, gone are the days where you need your address.
Yes, that's important, right? Because that can also lead to scams, right? If people have your full address and your name and everything. So don't put your full address on your resume. Right.
And don't put references. Like, that's, again, not necessary. Don't offer that up to people. Give them just what they need.
Yeah.
And it takes up space. And anyway, they don't deserve the names of your friends just yet. So
I love it.
They haven't earned that.
Goes close to your heart for now.
Yeah, but put your LinkedIn up there and customize your LinkedIn URL. So it's just that extra little, like, I know what I'm doing. So I don't know. And it's really easy to do, to customize your LinkedIn URL. But put that at the top of your resume along with your phone number and email. That's kind of it. If you are in certain professions, like if you have a website or a link to a portfolio, like that needs to be in there for sure also. But for most people. Just use, I would say, like, take as many postings as possible and just go through and highlight all the words that are the same, and let that be used to, like, how you focus your, let that focus your resume for you, right? So that you're speaking the right language and telling the right story.
I love this so much. It's interesting because the experience that you have or the titles that you have or whatever, they could be worded in a lot of different ways. You might as well word it in a way that makes sense for the job that you're applying for.
Right. What you're doing might be called one thing and it's called something else at this other company you're applying for.
Yes.
It's the same thing. So what I want you to do is put your title as it shows / their title. And then that way it gets picked up. And then when they ask, you just say, it's the same thing. I just wanted to call it what you call it. Right?
Yes.
It's not a big deal. Resumes aren't legally binding documents. It's your marketing tool. So it can be a little, as long as you can justify it. I don't want you to lie about anything, but as long as you can explain it or back it up, like, do what you got to do.
I love that. Those are the types of things that I did. I've been a coordinator and a manager at this company, but they're looking for an executive assistant. That's basically a lot of the stuff I did as a coordinator. What if I just put executive assistant / coordinator, hoping that it gets seen, but like, oh, this person's done exactly the job that we're applying for or whatever, right? So I love that you can actually put both and just explain it later. How do you feel about people putting the year that they... if they have schooling or something that they're putting on there, the year that they graduated, or just leave that off completely.
Leave it off.
Yes.
Ain't nobody's business.
And now, also, if you're really go back to school also.
Yeah. Right. And again, nobody's business. But if you're a really recent grad, I understand, because you don't have much work experience and that sort of explains it, right? When you've only had two jobs, they're like, oh, well, they only graduated 4 years ago. I get it. Once you have more than that, just take it off. Once you have a solid a solid history to lean on. Also, once you have a solid history to lean on, move it to the bottom. That should not be at the top of your resume, because your experience is what matters. As you know, you can get a degree in whatever the hell you want and have a successful career doing something entirely different.
I majored in religious studies and religions of the world.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And then became a comedian. It's like, what are we doing here? What the
fuck? Yes, that is exactly right. Yeah, so leave years off for things like that. The only years are the working years, and that's just because people really do want to see, like, that you've either worked consistently, or they will ask you where there's, you know, a chunk missing. Yeah. Be prepared to answer for that. But yeah, absolutely, leave those off.
Great. No, I think that's so good. Yeah, because it's just, if people are making assumptions already, it's like they're also going to make an assumption based on like the year that you graduated. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's also weird.
Unfortunate, but weird. Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of tips do you have maybe for people who do have gaps in their work history? Should they put that somewhere on their resume on why there's a gap, or just wait for to address it in an interview, in a cover letter? What do you think?
Wait for it to be brought up. Like, if you were doing freelance during that time, of course, absolutely put it, you know, or if you were volunteering and the skills related, absolutely put it. You don't even have to say it's volunteer work. Just put what you were doing. If you really just weren't working, say you got laid off and it was the beginning of the pandemic, so it took you a long time to find something else.
Yeah,
people kind of get it. So just be straightforward about it and have an answer.
Like, right.
I will say, though, if you are not working, like, do something with that time so that you can say, well, I wasn't working, but I was taking these classes to prepare for this. Or, you know, I was caring for my parent, which people are doing more and more now, too. Be as intentional with that time as if you were working. I think it's really important. But don't make it something it wasn't. Just be prepared to have the question asked.
Do you feel like there's certain gaps that could deter somebody from even getting an interview and getting an opportunity to explain why there's a gap? But let's say that somebody, you know, cared for their elderly parents or something for 3 years. So there's a 3-year gap between this job and this job. In something like that, where they could, because we know people can make assumptions based on a resume, something like that, would it be worth putting like a one-liner in a cover letter or something, or a message of like, the reason there's a gap is this, or just really like, if they're not giving you an interview based on a gap, maybe that's not for you then. Maybe that's just not the company for you that can kind of fill in the blanks for themselves, that like, life happens, or, you know,
that's my overarching philosophy, is you're going to get the interviews you're supposed to have. Especially if it's something personal, like caring for a parent or a child, I feel like, again, that's nobody's damn business unless they earn the right to get that from you. Right.
Yeah.
And fortunately though, because of pandemic layoffs, and then there was the recent layoffs in the tech industry and stuff, I find that gaps aren't viewed as critically as they were previously. Like, they're willing to ask the question. If you have the right skill set and the qualifications they're looking for, I'm finding that people are getting the interviews still. It still goes back to applying for the right jobs.
Great. Oh, that's awesome to know. That's awesome to hear. Question for you about listing your location on a resume if you're applying to something that is not a remote job, but maybe it's out of state, you're willing to relocate. But what if the person on the other end is like, it's just going to be easier to only take interviews from people who already live in the area? What do we do in that situation? I've definitely been on the inside of some of those discussions, but I'd love to hear like what your experience has been with like clients.
That's a tough one. That is really a tough one, because you're right. What you are facing is getting them to like leap over that psychological hurdle of, you know, will they actually come? Can they get here? You know, it helps that we don't put any kind of address on our resume anymore, but they will still see where you've been working. So they are going to make assumptions about that. If you really are genuinely going to be going there, you could just at the top of your resume, instead of your whole address, you could just put the city and state and just to help them, again, make that psychological leap. You could also, in your cover letter, say planning to move there by. if you have that, right? That helps a lot too.
That's great.
Because of the remote culture we have now, it's not as big of a deal. People have grown, some companies, I will say. There are certain things. Like with healthcare, you're always going to be on site for the most part, right? There are certain things right. like that. But most companies now aren't as leery. I'm just not seeing it quite as much.
Is it ever okay to use like a friend's address that lives in the area that you are planning to move to or want to live in?
Can you lie? The only place you would use that address would be on the application.
Right.
And the reality is no one's going to actually mail you anything.
Right.
So it kind of doesn't matter, right? And I assume if you did get there and didn't have housing, you would stay with that friend, right?
Yeah. No, I like where this is going, right? Half truth.
So, you know, I think it is a situation of just don't get yourself caught up in something that, you know, that is an outright lie. Don't, yeah. That's not who you are. We don't want that. But if it's something that can be sort of justified or explained or really is part of the plan, just do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because again, it's only on the application. Now, the application is the only legal document, right? You sign that. Mm-hmm. But again, the address doesn't matter on that as much until you start working.
Right.
And then you better get them your right address. But right. But yeah, people have temporary addresses all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I think this is so interesting because although this was before the pandemic happened, I worked, one of my jobs, I worked at a movie studio and you know, was kind of instructed like, look, like it's really fast paced. It's quick turnaround. The people that are out of state usually cannot make it happen, get here quickly and find their home and all this stuff. Like when we're hiring so quickly. And so it was kind of like, you know, hey, look for the people that are already here or that are not too far away. And yeah. so, and that always kind of bummed me out because what if that person could make it happen? So, you know, I listened a little bit. Yeah. There's still a lot of people that I offered an interview to and all of that who were out of state and they could make it work. But sometimes like that, those inside conversations are happening and you don't even know that just by right. simply listing the city on your resume, you could be, you know, being counted out.
Right. And I would say your manager was right too. Yeah. Right. This is a situation where there is no one right answer because it is hard, right. especially because I assume you're talking about moving to LA and coming from Nebraska to LA.
Yeah.
That's quite a sticker shock. Right. And it does. Right. It might take you a little while to figure out how to find a place that you can actually afford.
Yeah.
But luckily now with the video interviews and things like that, like people rarely, the first interview is rarely in person. That's usually down the road a ways anyway. So right. it gives these people time to prepare. And so to that point though, you could also add that line. In addition to, I plan on moving by, you could say, I'm available for interviews, you know, immediately. That right. would probably help also.
Oh, I love that. No, that's great because like you're right. Most interviews are happening remotely, which is awesome. Yeah. This the job that I was helping hire for was all in person. They wanted in person mm-hmm. interviews, but that's also good because hey, if somebody's willing to fly out for the interview and then they're making it work with the move, like that also shows like pretty early on if you offer them an interview and they're like, oh, I can't fly out for that or then okay, great. You tried, you offered it and you can move on. Anything else that you want to say about resumes before we get into some cover letter tips?
Yes. Know your audience with the resume in that, you know, I do work with a lot of creatives and so they need to have two resumes, one that is suitable for the online application system and one that actually reflects their personality. And so know when to use that. So if they're meeting a person or if they have a name of somebody, then send your fun resume. But when right. you're applying online, always use the one that the computer can read. And I know it kills some of my creatives because they are very boring, these ATS-friendly resumes. But you just got to have it. Use all the colors you want. I don't care. Right. But just we want to make sure you have a chance at being seen. Right. So sort of know your audience. Whereas like if you're an academic or you're applying for a position in research, you might want a CV, which are even uglier, which are worse. Do not... if you have more than a few years experience of work, you know, I would say more than two jobs or something, don't try to force it on one page, because then you're missing out on opportunity for keywords to be found. You're missing out on getting recognition for things you've done because you're trying to truncate your experience. So that whole one page thing, you know, the computer doesn't care how long your resume is.
So interesting.
Yeah.
The advice I've always heard is try to keep it on one page.
Yeah, but no.
Maybe
that
that's
is
for when you're sending it to somebody that isn't a machine. Like,
well,
maybe.
Even then, when I was recruiting, if I would get a resume and I could tell when they forced it on one page, and it would frustrate me to no end because I know there's stuff that's missing that might actually help them. But as it is, I have to put them aside as a maybe, because I'm going to look at all the people who show me they have the experience I'm looking for.
Right.
And sort of check all the boxes. And then maybe if I don't find enough, I'll look at this one and give them another shot. So there's just no reason. I mean, over two pages, yeah, generally no.
Okay.
Like at that point, because yeah. Resumes only have to go back 10 years, is I guess the other tip. So, but yeah, don't try and cram it on one page. You're not doing yourself any favors, because even I would say the recruiters generally don't care, because they're just going through and like checking quickly. They're quickly scanning first to make sure you actually fit the criteria, and then they're going to go back and read it. Mm-hmm. Hiring managers, yeah, maybe they care, but as long as the most relevant stuff is there, you know, front and center for them, they may not read the second page, but we don't care. At that point, you've made it to the hiring manager.
This is so interesting, because I, you know, this, again, this was a while ago, so I know things have changed, which is why I'm so excited to talk to you. Because when I was helping hire, it was easier for me to only take people on who submitted one page resumes, because I had to print everything out and organize and staple and get it to the right people. And so for me, it was way more work when people had multiple page resumes. And so I personally enjoyed when somebody had a one pager, because I could print it, I could organize it easy and all that stuff. I didn't have to staple it or make sure that the second page didn't get lost first in somebody else's resume. And so it's just crazy. Like, you never know what the internal process is for a company, but I would imagine a lot of things are done digitally now and not printing physically and all that stuff. But who knows? I don't know.
But you know, I also think, to your point, like, again, let's go back to knowing your audience. Like, you are working for a studio in that world, like, one pagers make sense. It's very common for you to just see like the list of what they've been in, or the list like that. People are more trained for one page in that industry. If
and
you were,
you're hiring people kind of, that position was hiring for a lot of people straight out of college or grad school.
Oh yeah.
And so the one their work experience doesn't need two pages, right? Usually.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah, no, so I totally agree. And so I think that goes back to like, everything's very individualized. Know your know who you're sending it to, know the industry, know, you know, all of that. So that makes sense to me that in your role, one page would have been the most appropriate.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because it also makes sense. Like, look, if somebody's applying for a job where like they need to see that you have 10 to 15 years of experience doing that thing, you need to be able to show all that experience and not cut things off that are important by trying to stick it on one page.
Right. And they need to see the progression, right? They need to see that you had progressively more experience and more like leadership and more responsibility and all of that.
Wow.
So yeah, don't diminish what you've done in that way.
Let's talk about making a resume colorful. Should people do it? Should people not? Does it help you stand out? Okay.
Go crazy.
As long as the copy that's written on it is making sense for the role. And then if they happen to come across it, your pink or purple or blue might stand out.
First of all, like, no pictures.
Okay. I see a lot of pictures when I would look through stuff. There's a lot of photos. What's going on there? I would love your advice.
No, do not open yourself up to that discrimination, because we know people might say they're not, but we all know we have bias. Just don't open yourself up to that on either side, as a recruiter or as an applicant. Think about the computer reads from left to right. So we need everything to just be in straight line. You know, there's a lot of like resumes you can, templates you can buy and customize, and they have these columns and they look really cool, but they're not going to get read properly. So it's going to get jumbled up in the system. And so just be leery of those. You can, that can be your fun resume. That can be your one pager. Like, with that, make an infographic. I don't care, because that's going straight to a person. So do whatever you want. But that's where, like, colors don't matter, but not all of the systems can read text boxes. So don't use those, because you don't know. You know, eventually these things will catch up. Technology will catch up. But keep in mind, these companies have paid a ton of money for this, you know, their applicant system, applicant tracking system. So yeah, they're not going to pay, you know, for a while. So yeah, eventually yeah, they will get better. But right now we have to speak to the lowest common denominator. So we have to assume that they read left or right. We have to assume they can't read text boxes, you know, but they don't have, you can find plenty of examples of resumes online that are ATS friendly. Okay. And it's okay to download and just pop your info in there.
That is so good, because I think a lot of people get excited to like get something cute on Canva and put their stuff on. Yes. It, but it's like all those design things might not be reading in the system yeah, very well. So like you mentioned, so can somebody just Google like ATS friendly resume template
totally,
and find what they're looking for?
Totally.
Perfect.
Like, actually, yeah, even in resume? Word, I believe all of the templates, resume templates in Word are ATS friendly.
Oh, great.
I haven't looked lately, but last time I did, they were fine.
Oh, that's
and so,
perfect.
Yeah, add color. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't affect anything.
Right.
So that's where your personality can come out. The fonts, just make sure it's easily readable, like easy on the eyes. You definitely want that.
Yeah, styling it a little bit, just a mm-hmm, little pop of color, just so you mm-hmm, stand out if they are, you know, mm-hmm, either printing them or seeing them on, you know, sifting through. I think that's nice. Like mm-hmm, you tried a little extra.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just like, because I've also been the person that is just like going through a sea of black and white resumes and they're fucking crammed with stuff and it's like I do not want to read all of this, and so like kind of the minimalist look with like a pop of yeah, color is so kind to my eyes when I'm yes, looking at 300 applicants, you know. So it's like what's the happy medium? It works for the system and you also get to stand out and you know, individuate yeah, your resume.
Absolutely. And the other thing I think of too, because I know I've been there too, is since now I've given you all permission to go to two pages with your resume. Yeah. Put a little space in there, like let
yes,
it breathe. Right, it is not right, a newspaper article. Just yeah, a space between your sections, do what you gotta do, but
yes,
yeah, don't
absolutely,
and think about it before you even read it, like how does it look? Does it offend your eyes or does it feel okay? So
would you want to read it if you had to read 50 right, to 100 of them?
Right,
right? And it's like how do you make sure the most important stuff is being seen, you know, like
right,
what's the difference between a resume and a CV? Because you had mentioned
great question. So a CV is generally would only be used for academic roles mm-hmm, or research, very heavily like scientific research type stuff. But okay, the difference is a CV will generally have your one, they're ugly as hell. They're just like just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. But they have your like publications, presentations, so, you know, any of that, it could take up pages. Like CVs can be pages and pages and pages long because of those different things. So most of us, the majority of us, do not need a CV. And even if you look at like in, you know, like in the European countries, they call them CVs, but it's still just mostly a resume, except sometimes they still put the pictures and their religious preference. We won't go there. But theirs is still just what we would call a resume generally. But the difference
okay,
in the U.S. is that it would have all of your academic accomplishments and such.
Oh, okay. What does CV
yeah,
stand for?
Curriculum vitae.
Oh.
I don't know what
that
means.
Latin?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's just what it stands for.
Fascinating. Okay, that's really good to know.
Latin? I don't know.
Yeah, sounds Latin. let's move on to cover letter tips.
Cover letters, you won't always need to write one. I give your permission if it doesn't. Some of the systems don't even allow for one, in which
yeah,
case you're kind of off the hook, but follow-up is super duper important. But where cover letters are really useful is if you are pivoting at all, you use the cover letter to help connect the dots between what you did and what you're going to do. So definitely write a cover letter. So when you can, or if they say cover letters encourage, always write a cover letter in those situations. If they're opening
right,
themselves up to one, you write one. And I know that's making a lot of people groan right now because nobody likes it. But for the most part, cover letters can be fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. Like it's an opening that says where you know, what position you applied to, basic qualification. Then it's a few bullets that speak directly to the bullets on their posting. You know, again,
right,
connect the dots.
Right.
the way I approach it is we want to take as much thinking out of it for them as possible. We want to make it as easy as possible for them to move you forward. And so then it's the opening paragraph, the bullets, and then a close. And that's it for most things. But I will say, one of my clients, she was applying to a local marketing communications company. So she wrote her cover letter in the form of a press release. And it was so fun.
Clever. Oh my
so,
God.
So appropriate. So because creative. It not only shows her personality, but it showed a real skill that she would need to be using yes. in this role.
Oh.
And she's been there for many years now.
Oh my God. I love so, that. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So it's okay. So it's like when you can, yeah, adapt, be creative, have fun. So yeah, be open to the idea.
That is so great. And I mean, isn't it fine just to have kind of like a template that you just get mm-hmm. in there and personalize for the position? I mean, you don't have to start from scratch with every single cover letter, right? Like a lot of the points are probably going to be similar. You can just word them differently.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. If you are starting from scratch with every cover letter or having to spend too much time customizing your resume for each position, then you probably haven't honed your target enough.
Yeah.
And you've kept it too broad.
I've been there, Shelby. Like, I got 12 cover letters and 12 different resumes for 12 different industries.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I've been there.
Yeah. Don't do that to yourself. You know, we haven't even talked about the whole podcast in itself would be just how to preserve your mental well-being during the job search. It's so hard and so, but so important because I think above all else, like energy matters.
Right.
In this situation. And so we need you in like, you know, peak Delaney when you go to interviews and when you all of that. So
it can be so discouraging when you are applying and you're not getting any bites and you're not exactly sure why, right? Because I think, again, we have our self-worth in this society can be so tied up to how we make money, what we do, all that. And so people really take it as a rejection of self when they're not getting the interviews or this or that. What has helped me is really like not taking things so personally. Like, yes, there could be something that you could be doing, right? Like listening to a podcast episode like this with all the tips that you're sharing, Shelby, is so helpful. Like, okay, let me make sure my technical stuff is there. But a lot of it is also just not within our control. And there's not a whole lot we could do. The fact that there's, you know, people forget to take down job openings that are no longer available. I've heard some companies keep up job listings all year round, even when they're not hiring. So they have a consistent pipeline of candidates coming through. There's so many things that have nothing to do with your qualifications or ability and stuff like that. And just being kind to yourself about it.
Right. When you say, you just stop taking it as personally, which I think is amazing. How did you get there? How did you stop taking it so personally?
I started Googling what the hell's happening. what is going on to where I feel like these things that I've applied for, I'm qualified for. And then you start learning about what's going on with the economy and the job market. And so even just Googling like, hey, this is what's going on. There might look like there's 100% of these jobs available, but actually only 30% of them are available and they're not being seen, not because you're doing anything wrong, but because they're just not even there anymore.
Like, yeah, it really
bad about you.
I promise if you're doing all the things you're supposed to do, you're going to get the interviews you're supposed to have. I swear. Remember, I've been doing this for years. Yeah. So I've seen it. Like I have all this data. I think it's important in that situation too, though, that you sort of disassociate and you take a step back and you say, okay, so where in the process is it breaking down? Am I not getting interviews? Well, then maybe I need to tweak my resume. Maybe I need to rethink who I'm applying to or what I'm applying to. Right. Like what needs to happen there? Am I only getting first interviews and no callbacks? Well, maybe I need to get some interview practice in. Maybe I'm not doing my research ahead of time. Like be really honest with yourself and with the process, but look at it as objectively as you can. And you might have to do that because, you know, like a traditional job search takes months.
Right.
So you might have to do that, sort of take a step back multiple times and be like, okay, well, now I'm getting to the second interview, but I'm not getting the final, you know, the final round. Maybe it's my presentation that is falling short, or maybe, you know, it's that I'm not doing well when I meet with the executive. So how can I improve my executive presence? So there's all these kinds of things, and you can improve all those things. there's people out there to help you. There's friends, there's coaches that will help you with all of that, right? But you have to be honest with yourself first and figure out sort of where it's breaking down.
Definitely. That's such a great point. Thank you for saying that it takes months, because I think that's another thing is like the people, if they're not getting some kind of hits right away, they're, you know, they're going inward of like, what does this mean about me? And then the longer it does go on where it's still not happening, that kind of like job search kind of depression spiral can kick in of like, I'm never going to find a job that I like this, you know, and like that can really be so detrimental to somebody's mental health. And we're just here to say, you're not a loser. You are qualified for something out there. And there are people that can help you find those things and make sure that you're working around all these like loopholes and stuff that you don't even know about.
Right.
How can you shift up your approach and angle when something's not working? Just pivot.
Exactly. And when you start to get in that spiral, when you get all up in your head, like you start losing creativity, right? So where you would normally be like, oh, I should go to that meetup because those are people that are adjacent to what I want to be doing. Or, you know, maybe I will go to this dinner party tonight to meet people because they all work and they may know somebody.
Yeah.
Like you start losing sort of that, just that openness and that creativity. I think the most important part of a job search is having the belief that you can get a job. When I think of people who struggle and take, you know, languish in that search indefinitely versus those who actually get something, it's a matter of like belief in themselves. A lot of it. So
good. And that's why it's so important. Like, hey, if you need to just get something for the time being, because finding the job that you might really want could take many months or a year or more or whatever it is that you're going for. It's okay to just take whatever job that you can get and let that be a tool that can help fuel you and, you know, where you can be more creative outside of that job. I mean, I remember I was, when I was doing stand-up and I realized like, I got to get out of this industry. This is not good for my mental health. I took a job in a call center that was not for me, right? But it provided me with the stability that I needed to dream again of what's next. And so now I didn't have to worry about where my next paycheck is coming from. What's this, right? It was a 9-to-5, which after having been like, you know, a performer who was traveling and making money that way, felt like I was giving up, felt like a failure, felt like, oh my God, I got to go back to a conventional job. I'm going to be freaking miserable. It ended up being one of the best jobs I've had, one of the best decisions